welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we'll hear Official Detective from 1956. But right now, it's Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover and a broadcast of Broadway Is My Beat from November 8th, 1952 on CBS.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Nighttime of November, a special time on Broadway. Sense it. It's a new time. When the after images of early autumn are dying, cloaked already in river mists, chill and drifting. And sense this, that winter is already at a place not far away, drifting too, hung from a pale moon, scudding over the city and making new shadows. Hurry, it gets dark quickly. Where I was, darkness was cut across by the fingers of light, intersecting the beams of two searchlights, focused groundward. Destruction of building temporarily halted. Rush wrecking job stopped because of this. Remains of dead man found and report phoned to headquarters.
This will be the cellar, Mr. Clover, where we found him. Under 3 inches of composition flooring.
Uh-huh.
What does it look like to you, Mr. Clover? Real puzzle, huh? Just a skeleton and all?
Well, there's something we can tell about.
You know, what I can't figure out, that satchel of money laying beside him. Must be over $1,000 in there.
About that.
Imagine lying 5 years under a cellar floor.
How do you know it's been 5 years, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I bought these three buildings to tear them down for a garage. I got a story about this one. Right where we're standing.
What story?
Of course, we've torn down to the cellar, so you can't tell, but this one used to be a nightclub, you know.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was. And that's the story, a scandal or something about this nightclub. The bank told me. Partner or something 5 years ago ran away with a payroll or something to California.
What else?
Nothing, except that the other partner tried to hold on to the club, but it failed a year later. Bankrupt. Bank took it over 4 years ago. Couldn't lease it. Nailed it up. Anyhow, that's the story the bank told me.
It doesn't look like the man ever got to California. He was murdered.
Sure, what else? He didn't just lie there and pull 3 inches of composition flooring over his head.
Shot.
Huh?
Twice. See the bullet, the chest cavity? Small caliber, .22. And here, right arm fractured, and beside it, see another bullet.
Bigger one?
Yeah, .38. Shot twice by two different guns.
Like I said, a puzzle. Well?
Well, what?
This is a rush job, Mr. Clover. You know that. Let's get this stuff out of here.
Morning, in case you didn't hear.
Hi, Dennison. Sit down.
Excuse me for saying it, but you look a little beat. Big night last night?
No.
Well, you're a single man, Danny. You're entitled to a big night. Were you going to say something, Danny?
No.
Oh. Then maybe this will interest you. Got a rundown on a corpse you found last night.
What about it?
Well, that's what it takes to get a rise out of you.
Come on, come on. Get with it.
Yeah, I better do that, else I won't be liked, huh? Technical shot at the teeth. Mugovan put the code on the teletype. Late last night, the one place we got a call back from was Dannemora.
You get on identification?
Code checked out to a former prisoner named of Bob Foster. Released 6 years ago after a 10-spot stretch for grand larceny.
Anything else?
Stick with me, kid. I'm loaded. My identification came in. I checked it with R&I. They had a file on Foster. Here, wait. Mugovan left some notes for you. Yeah, 1947, May. May 23. A year after he was out of Dannemora, Foster was wanted on suspicion of grand larceny. Packed a satchel with his partner's dough and ran out on him. That would be the satchel you found.
Who was his partner?
A fellow by the name of Joe Turner. He and Foster opened a nightclub together, the Blue Sheen. A year after Foster allegedly checked out with his partner's dough, the joint went into bankruptcy. And the word is Joe Turner cried his heart out at the time, beat his chest, called his partner naughty names.
Any lead on Turner?
And one of the boys traced him to a hotel on West 12th, only the hotel is out of business now. Management converted the place into offices. Nobody knows what became of the hotel records, so...
So, on all points, bulletin on Joe Turner, huh?
Yeah.
Is that all?
Yeah, it's got a girl type in it, too. Aggie Blaine. Used to do a poker with clever parakeets at the boys' nightclub. The last known address, let's see, 1326 West 34.
Hey, you did real good, Dennison.
Yeah, pull up a minute, Danny. There's more.
Oh, what?
Those bills you found in the satchel.
And what about them?
Their serial numbers were in series. Must have been the nightclub's payroll. A few weeks after Foster went up in a puff of air, 520s out of the same series turned up in sunny California.
That's all? Now I can go?
Yeah, you can go.
Don't sit in that chair, Sonny. Just pick a spot on the floor and stand on it. It's the floor, not the rug.
This okay, Miss Devlin?
Floors don't belong to me, Sonny. Furniture does. Let's not louse up the furniture, huh? What do you want?
Some information about a girl named Aggie Blaine.
My niece. Brother's daughter. Brother's dead. Went out without muffler and rubbers. Winter of 36. Got himself a flu that wouldn't quit. Fell over in his face next day. Never got up.
Where's Aggie?
My niece?
That's what you said.
Blew out of here a long time ago. Don't know whether she's alive, dead, or what, or could be married to the King of Turkey for all I know.
How long ago did she leave?
Oh, been 5 years. Used to be a dancer, Aggie was. Used to. Hey, don't lean on the furniture, Sonny. Pretty furniture, huh? Huh?
Yeah.
New as the day I got it. You want to sit down? We go in the kitchen. Not in the parlor. Not on this stuff.
What do you do, Miss Devlin?
Huh?
Your niece used to live with you. She's gone now. What do? Taking rumors?
You mean sublet, I guess?
Huh?
What for? Who needs it?
Retired, huh?
It's nice.
And all this furniture, ornate.
Huh? Oh, you mean tricky with the curlicues and the things, huh? Yeah, all mine. Bought and paid for.
Let's get back to Aggie, Miss Devlin.
I don't know if she's alive or dead. I told you
she used to dance at a nightclub called the Blue Sheen.
With pigeons. A blue one and yellow one. One named Gloria, the other named Phyllis. Oh, I've seen it myself.
Look, Miss Devlin, one of the men who owned that club was found last night. He'd been murdered.
You're leaning, Sonny.
He'd been murdered. And your niece might be able to tell us something about it. Couldn't you give me some...
No, nothing. Aggie, she was a dancer. Is she alive? Is she dead? How do I know?
And leave there. And once more into November day, its furnishings also not to be touched, nor leaned against. For instance, the autumn perfume worn by the girl who almost brushes your sleeve, sidesteps, changes course, hurries on. And from far off, the brief, wild sob of a freighter sailing out of autumn waters. And at headquarters, it arranges itself into familiar pattern. Routine investigation into death. And wait. And on the first quick surge of November night, the return on the All Points Bulletin, Joe Turner, bankrupt nightclub owner, had been spotted in a Skid Row bar. Third booth on the right was all his. Go there. The place is Jukebox and Fat Cat scrawling symbols and sawdust. The place is Joe Turner, who was once a man.
You come up with a drink, mister, and something good will happen to you.
Do you understand me, Joe? I'm from the police.
Something real good. I'll dance for you. You watch me. You watch me. You hear this just for you.
Sit down, Joe. You don't have to do that.
You like me, huh? You'll buy, huh? I got other routines.
Tell me about your nightclub, Joe.
Huh?
Your nightclub, the Blue Sheen. Tell me about the club and about Bob Foster.
Him? Oh, you're a friend of Bob's? I'll hate you. I'll squash you like a fly, so help me.
What'd he do to you, Joe?
Who did something to me?
Foster. Bob Foster. He stole from you, didn't he?
Walked out on me. Didn't even wave goodbye. He just took my money, danced off someplace. Far away. Never sent a postcard. Nothing. Aggie either.
Aggie Blaine?
Ah, there was a dancer. You ever see her? Oh, it's a stunning dancer. Well, I'll show you a dance. It's with the hands first. You see, it's like this.
You know where Aggie is, Joe?
Aggie's far away, too. Aggie and Bob. Blue Sheen.
We found Bob last night, Joe. He'd been buried under the cellar of your nightclub.
Bob? Bob, Bobby Foster. Well, that's where he's been.
You kill him, Joe? Because he stole from you and went away? Joe, listen.
I performed for you, mister. Where's my drink?
You kill him, Joe?
I don't know. Maybe I did. He deserved it. Maybe I did. You think I did?
Come on, Joe. Let's you and me go uptown. And book him. Charge, suspected felony, murder. Turn him over to the policeman schooled as to proper procedure and proper jail tier and proper cell. Back to the office and sit at the desk. Far away, a light is turned off, and another. And a swollen sag of gray suddenly hangs from the black sky. Morning, folding over the horizon.
Danny, downstairs, come on.
Down the corridors and the steps, and outside is damp and still night.
Ambulance just pulled in. Phoned it upstairs, I got it.
Miss Devlin.
Uh-huh, shot. Dead, Danny? On account of the police rang her doorbell yesterday? On account of she's Aggie Blaine's aunt? Talking to you, Danny. You think so?
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Two outstanding events on CBS Radio tomorrow in the daytime. For one, the Quiz Kids return to the star's address to begin another series of their breathtaking mental gymnastics. Professor Joe Kelly will be in charge of the Little Wizards, and they'll all be waiting for you to join them tomorrow on most of these same stations. The other big event tomorrow is the American radio premiere of Christopher Columbus, Darius Milhaud's famous opera conducted in concert form by Dimitri Mitropoulos. It's the featured work on the New York Philharmonic Symphony, heard on most of these same stations tomorrow.
Broadway makes its entrance out of subway kiosks, out of night corridors, blinks once and long against the white of a new November day, then moves into it, soft, polite. It's the thing to do. Treat the morning nice. Don't step on the cracks. You'll still be on your feet when day is done. And the other performers, the man hanging from a spectacular, twisting out the Mazdas that died in the night. And the mannequin, her face dusted, a bolt tightened where wax had given in tonight. And torso and head tilted closer now to shop window. And on wax lips, the good morning kiss. A new day, kid. Live it. And at headquarters, November morn, is Sergeant Gino Tartaglia dipping a finger into a container of coffee.
Just testing, Danny.
Oh?
You leave these things to the whim of that new girl in Ballo's Delco. I knew it. Too sweet.
Oh, that's too bad, Gino.
Some days you wake up on the wrong side, you get too many lumps in your container.
True, true, Gino.
Don't feel bad about it, Danny. No percentage in building a tragedy out of it. We'll both be bigger persons if we don't make of it an issue with the delicatessen. And off to work we go. You game, Danny?
Whatever you say, Gino.
Am I permitted a simple statement of fact?
Of course.
I admire you.
Thank you.
To work. Wino Joe Turner is still in the drying out tank. Also, ballistics has established that in the murder of Miss Devlin, aunt to Aggie Blaine, the murder weapon was the same that 5 years ago did do in Bob Foster, suspected absconder with his partner's loot.
Same weapon.
Indeed. The bullet that was found in the chest cavity of the remains of Bob Foster bore the same markings, riflings, as the bullet extracted from Miss Devlin. Ergo, same weapon was used. Small caliber gun, Danny, .22.
Then whoever killed Foster 5 years ago is still around.
Which brings me to Miss Aggie Blaine.
Oh, how?
That in a routine perusal made by our boys of vital statistic records, a marriage license date of July 30, 1947, was found made out to one Aggie Blaine and one Herbie Morse.
They find the...
Don't interrupt, Danny. A check was made on said Herbie Morse and was found that he owns a drugstore on 23rd corner of 9th. That's how. You care for my coffee, Danny?
No, but thanks anyway, you know. Thanks for everything.
can I do for you?
Mr. Moss?
Right.
My name's Clover, Mr. Moss. I'm from the police.
Hi.
I'm trying to get some information about a girl named Aggie Blaine.
Depends upon what kind of info you want. She was my frau. Some things I'll tell you, some things I won't.
Just tell me how you met her and when you met her and why you're not married to her. Things like that, Mr. Moss.
What's the matter? You think you could have stayed married to her?
Mr. Moss,
you haven't got the dough on the wherewithal.
Just tell me about it, Mr. Moss.
She's not going to make a fool out of me. You know what I'm going to do one day, buddy? Get me another wife, a big gal, a big blonde gal. Then I'm going to find me Aggie and walk up and down in front of her with my big blonde wife rubbing her cheek to me. I'm going to
show
her...
When did you meet Aggie?
On an airplane. I said hello to her, and from there on in, it was air pockets all the way to Frisco.
You met her on the way to California, huh? Now, when was this?
In 47, druggist convention. I never saw the inside of the convention hall, not with Aggie showing me the fancy eating places, and me with a paper to read on dressing at the prescription department.
Now, go on.
That was in June. Then back in New York, somehow, she wouldn't let me see her. Then she called me.
When?
July the 30th. I know, because July 31st, we tied the knot.
How come the divorce?
A fella. I worked late one night, fixing up a one-cent sale. I came home. She wouldn't let me in. I beat the door in with my bare hands. There was a fella there selling rugs. He gives me his card and left. Next day, she followed him. One of these days, I'm going to look that guy up. You know that?
You still have his card?
Do I? Right in my wallet.
I want it.
Oh. You're going to fix him, huh? Swell. Here's the card. I'm on your side, buddy.
Have you seen Aggie since then?
I'm happy to say no. However, the day that I do, I will also find me that big blonde, buddy. I'm going to parade her up and down in front of that...
And get out of the way of Mr. Moss's wagging finger. And through the aisle, lined with preparations guaranteed to keep you alive longer than anybody. Right turn, down the aisle of space guns, insecticides, and bubble baths. And then left at the table where everything is marked down to 19 cents. And out into the street. Legwork now. An address off the card given to you in the drugstore. Mr. Irving Lustbander, rug dealer.
Aggie? She ran out on me, mister. Long time ago. Customer of mine came in one day and ordered our most expensive number wall to wall. Aggie went along with the delivery truck and never come back.
Customer's name?
Ewing. Dr. Keith Ewing. Big... back man. Got offices in the Muncie building.
And at the offices of the Muncie building, be told by Dr. Ewing that Miss Blaine was merely a patient of his, and after he cleared up her back condition, he never saw her again. No, he never treated her at his office. She was an outpatient at the Cheney Hotel. So go there, Cheney Hotel. Yes, the clerk said. Miss Blaine, yes, indeed. He checked out, he's sorry to say. The morning after an automobile dealer's conclave, he remembers. Forwarding address, well, yes, indeed, 1213 East 61st. So go there. The girl who answers the door is dressed in velvet petal pushers, but shakes her head sadly at the name of Aggie Blaine. Agatha, it seems, moved out on her about a month ago. Bag, baggage, and her very own boyfriend, Tony. Where? Well, Tony owns the apartment building over on East River, Beekman Place. So go there. I'm from the police, Danny Clover.
And I'm too desperately sorry because whatever it is, I can't use it.
Let's talk about it inside, Miss Blaine.
Oh, but then we'd be committing something or other, wouldn't we?
Oh?
Oh, yes, there must be a city ordinance or something. You see, I'd let you in here and we'd talk or whatever, and all the time you'd be operating under false pretenses. Naughty.
Tell me about it.
You see, dear boy, I'm not Miss Blaine. Not the girl you need. Not Miss... what, Blaine?
Aggie Blaine. Girl who used to work at a club called the Blue Sheen, danced there with birds.
With birds? Oh, how desperately thrilling.
That's what we'll talk about, huh?
Of course, let's. I haven't indulged in anything so pulpy in years. Nightclub dancer with birds, man of the police knocking at my door. Oh, just walk right in, Mr. Clover. The rugs are deep and the fireplace is Italian marble and my dressing room is perfumes and custom-made crystal and full-length golden mirror and it's a castle and I call it home, so you may plump down wherever you like.
I'm grateful.
Don't thank me, thank Tony. Tony Crenshaw, my fiancé. Nothing's too good for you, Agatha, he said, and he's loving it. I get this shack on our wedding day. All mine. Oh, that Tony. He's a charm, all right, all right.
And now you're Agatha...
Agatha Raines. Always was, always will be. Oh, I almost slipped. Soon, Agatha Crenshaw, Tony's wife.
You want to hear about Aggie Blaine?
Dying. It's how we met, we two. Yeah, speak to me of Aggie.
5 years ago, she was a dancer at the Blue Sheen. She...
Yeah, there were feathered creatures. You said all that.
There was something else. A man named Bob Foster.
Just one man? Well, this dancer couldn't have been very good.
Bob Foster, ex-con. 5 years ago, 1947. Partner in the Blue Sheen. We found him the other day buried under its cellar flooring. He'd been shot twice, murdered.
Oh, tell me you're not making this up. Because if you are, I die of disillusion. It's so desperately sordid and thrilling.
You ever know this, Bob Foster?
Not till this precious instant. But don't let that stop you. Go on.
Aggie Blaine had an aunt, Miss Devlin. Yesterday, she was murdered with the same gun that killed Foster.
Isn't that always the way?
Another thing about Aggie Blaine. In 1947, she met a man on a plane to California. When they came back here, they got married. A man named Herbie Moss.
Serves the girl right, killing her aunt and that Foster fellow.
Yeah. Get your things. We're going downtown.
Oh, such a short time, and we so well know each other. Already, you're taking me out.
We want you for suspicion of murder. Get your things.
Oh, it's a lovely day, and when I got up, I didn't know what I'd do with myself this morning. And you've come up with something. Let's go wherever you want, Mr. Clover. And this room is what, Mr. Clover?
Interrogation room.
Sitting or standing?
Well, sit down, please. Smoke?
Oh, I have my own. You can light me, though.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Still excited?
Tolerably. It's slowing down. Do something about it, Mr. Clover.
Like book you now?
For what was that again? I've forgotten.
Murder.
Oh, that's a charge, all right. That's really one of the...
You got him? Bring him in. How do you feel, Joe?
It's a shame the way I feel right now. Hi, Aggie.
Charades, fellas? I supposed to guess what he is?
Yeah, do that. Hint, a guy named Joe Turner. Co-owner of a nightclub named the Blue Sheen. Partner found in the cellar. Employed a girl named Aggie Blaine. Now guess why he's here.
Hi, Aggie.
There's no excitement in it anymore, Mr. Clover. Take me home.
Then you don't know who this man is.
By the pink of his eyes, I'd say a wino.
You look nice, Aggie.
A rum pot.
Well, there's another way we can do it, Dennison. Get the druggist, get the rug salesman, the doctor.
Hey, look at her, Danny. She's getting excited all over again. Those people bring back fond memories, lady.
You should have seen her when she danced. Should have seen her with the blue light. With the spinning spot.
Hi, Joe.
Where you been, Aggie?
I looked for you once, Joe. I couldn't find you.
You're a stinking liar, Aggie.
Now you see why I didn't find you.
Now we all know each other. Hi, Aggie.
Sure. I used to know a cop.
I've been drinking a lot, Aggie. I've been thinking about you.
Have you?
Joe?
She's still pretty.
Almost all we need, Joe, is the motive. Why did you kill Bob Foster?
Hey, Aggie.
Don't remember out loud, Joe.
Do you want the business, Joe? The nightclub or her?
Tell him, Aggie.
You want to confess how you killed Bob? Go ahead.
Oh, baby, baby. I'm going to tell him my part, baby. I never killed anybody.
Joe.
Who'd I kill? I wanted the business, so I took a shot at Bob, but... I hit him in the arm, that's all. Then he ran to you, Aggie.
You boys believe rum pots around
here?
Go
on, Joe.
Next time I saw my poor old partner, he was dead.
Then you felt so sorry for him, Joe. You buried him under the cellar with some money to see him on his way.
Well, that Aggie, she's got a mind on it. She figured it. Go ahead, Aggie. Show the fellas how you got a mind on you.
Mr. Clover?
Uh-huh.
It's getting serious, huh? Huh, Mr. Clover?
That's the lieutenant's serious face, yeah. It's getting serious.
Look. Look, Bob Foster came over with a shot arm.
I said, Bob, before you go see an M.D. about your poor bullet-filled arm, here's a gun. Bob, I said, you shouldn't take that from a guy like Joe. When I handed the gun to him, it went off.
Well, it's some mind.
Then what was your aunt defending herself against when she got shot by the same gun?
Well...
When Bob came to you when he was shot, you were staying at your aunt's place, weren't you?
Well, yes, I was.
Your aunt knew what happened. Blackmailed you.
Hey, how about my aunt's furniture? A scream, huh?
Furniture, income, proceeds from blackmail.
Is your aunt dead, Aggie? I didn't know. Gee, you're all alone, huh?
She lost the whole thing for us, Joe. This policeman came calling. She got panicky, called me up and said she was going to talk.
Oh,
you see?
Yeah, sure.
From the first she lost it, Joe, you and me. Since I got back from California, remember?
Now, how about that California trip, Aggie?
Great.
Just took a flyer to plant some of that money Foster was supposed to have stolen to make it look like he'd run away to California.
Hi, Joe.
5 years, honey. I've had a lousy time. What about you?
Great. A time. A real time.
You're still lying.
Yeah. I've missed you, Joe. We probably see a lot of each other now. For a time.
In the ebb of nighttime, the slabs of Broadway lean against the darkness in crazy tilted angles. The balance is delicate, precise. So the walk must be careful, the talk quiet. It's the never-never time that drifts in from the edge of the world. The time of regret. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Mary Jane Croft was heard as Aggie Blaine and Sheldon Leonard as Joe Turner. Featured in the cast were James McCallion, Ted Bliss, Martha Wentworth, and Peter Leeds. Bill Anders speaking. Have you ever longed for escape? Escape from an everyday existence that may have a color of its own, but with which, nevertheless, you are temporarily bored? If so, CBS Radio's dramatic adventure program called Escape is meant for you. Every Sunday evening on most of these same stations, listen in for a new drama of Escape at the Star's address. Remember, Amos and Andy are here every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
Broadway is My Beat on Tuned to Yesterday from November 8, 1952 on CBS, in the very same year that the show's producer-director Elliot Lewis was also working on Suspense in that same capacity with our leading man Larry Thor as announcer of radio's outstanding Theater of Thrills. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. and now one of the few remaining broadcasts of Official Detective, we hear Lawson Zerbe and Louis Nye in a February 23, 1956 broadcast from Mutual.
Official Detective, dedicated to the men who guard your safety and protect your home, your police department.
Lieutenant Dan Britt, headquarters. Most witnesses to crimes are naturally excited, so their identifications of suspects are often open to question. A case in point is a crime that took place in a butcher shop owned by a man named Otto Kraus. One afternoon, a customer came in to buy some meat, but found the place empty. In a moment, she began to lose patience.
Mr. Kraus? Where are you? Mr. Kraus, this is Mrs. Leslie. I'd like to be waited on, please. I haven't got all day. I'd like to be... Now, what in the world is that? Oh, refrigerator. Oh, dear me. Just a moment. I'm coming. Mr. Kraus.
Police. Call the police.
You're positively blue. You must be half frozen.
Worse than that. Telephone the police.
The police? Why?
Look on the floor of the icebox.
On the floor. Merciful heavens. Who is this man?
A customer. My shop was held up when he got shot.
Oh. Is he badly hurt?
Worse than that. For 20 minutes, I've been locked up in the icebox. The dead man.
Here, Mr. Kraus. This coffee's nice and hot. You better drink it down.
Yeah. Thank you, Sergeant. I feel better.
You're not shivering anymore.
No, Lieutenant.
Now, this dead man's wallet identifies him as Thomas Hall.
Yeah, Mr. Hall. He was a regular customer of mine.
What time was he shot?
Let me see. What time is it now?
5 p.m.
5 p.m. Mrs. Leslie, telephone you at 25 minutes. I was locked in the icebox for 20 minutes. It was about a quarter after 4, Lieutenant, when it happened.
I see. Did you make any attempt to put up a fight?
Me? No, sir. I got more sense than to argue with a hold-up man. But poor Mr. Hall, he tried to take the fellow's gun away like a hero.
Now he's a dead hero.
Yeah.
What happened right after the shot?
The hold-up fella made me drag Mr. Hall into the icebox. Then, when I got inside, he slammed the door.
Can't you open the refrigerator from the inside?
Oh, sure, but he stuck a knife in the latch outside, so I couldn't turn it. It's a good thing Mrs. Leslie come in. I would have been dead myself, frozen stiff.
And how? Are you sure no money was taken from the register?
Yeah, I checked. He didn't get nothing.
Well, after the shooting, he was probably too scared to rob you. His main concern was to get away.
I hope you find him soon. It's a murderer.
Well, you can help us, Mr. Kraus. So please concentrate now. Give us a full description of the man.
All right. How do I start?
How old was he?
I would say about 50 years old.
How tall?
Just as tall as me. I'm 5'9¾".
Uh-huh. What did he look like?
Well, he had on big, thick glasses with, the horn rims.
How was he dressed?
Oh, this I remember very good. He had on a short blue sailor's coat.
A pea jacket?
Yeah, and a sailor's blue knitted cap.
A watch cap.
Yeah, and I don't remember what kind of pants and shoes.
Sure sounds like an ex-Navy man, Lieutenant.
Yeah. Mr. Kraus, did this man look familiar? Had you ever seen him before?
Yeah, the way he was dressed. I seem to remember seeing a man dressed like that around this neighborhood, but I don't know who he is.
The wagon boy just pulled up outside.
Oh, good. Yeah, thanks for your help, Mr. Kraus.
I wish I could do more. I hope you find this killer.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to start the hard way. Ringing doorbells and asking questions.
Officers look terribly tired. Here,
Sit down on the hall bench for a few minutes.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Foster. We've been beating our feet around this neighborhood for more than 3 hours.
Mm.
Yes, and we've drawn nothing but a big blank.
A murder in Mr. Cross's butcher shop. I can hardly believe it.
Well, we're hoping you might be able to help us a little.
Well, I'd like to, but I don't know how. I'm only a landlady here. I just rent rooms, that's all. 6 tenants. All seem to be honest men.
Are they all here now?
Well, I couldn't say. Mr. Ryan's in. I do know that. He lives here on the first floor. That's his door right over there.
I see. Now, Mrs. Foster, the shooting took place this afternoon at about 4:15.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of your roomers come in or go out about that time?
Well, now, let me think. Yes, Mr. Ryan came in.
What time?
Oh, about 4:30. I remember because I was just going out to get some milk. It was a very funny thing, too. Mr. Ryan was running.
Running into the house?
Yes. He almost knocked me down. He was in such a hurry. I asked him why he was running, but he didn't answer me. And I remember he had a frightened look on his face.
Well, how was he dressed?
Well, that's funny, too. He didn't have a hat or coat on. And you know it's chilly out today.
How much do you know about Ryan?
Well, not a thing, actually. But he's always very quiet and, well, kind of unpleasant.
Hmm. Come on, Sergeant. We have no actual reason for suspecting Ryan, but while we're here, let's talk to him.
Okay.
Now, thanks for your help, Mrs. Foster.
Oh, don't mention it. I hope I haven't caused any trouble.
Who is it?
We'd like to talk to you, Mr. Ryan.
What is it?
We're police officers.
What?
Close the door, Sergeant. What's your full name, please?
Earl Ryan. What's it all about?
We're investigating a shooting at Krause's butcher shop.
Yeah?
You came back here at 4:30. You were running. You weren't wearing a hat or coat. Would you tell us where you'd been?
Just out for a walk.
Why were you running?
Because I was cold. When I went out, I didn't realize how cold it was.
Do you wear glasses, Ryan? Thick ones with horn rims?
No. I never had a pair of glasses.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a truck driver. Right now, I'm out of work.
We'd like Mr. Krause to have a look at you at police headquarters. Would you be willing to come down with us?
Why not?
Did you get your hat and coat, please?
Well, sure, but... Hey, I'm not mixed up in this.
We hope not, Ryan.
I never even been inside that butcher shop.
Is this your only hat and coat?
Sure. This old brown coat and gray hat. It's all I own.
No pea jacket or watch cap in this closet, Lieutenant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ryan. Let's get out to the car. Otto Krause, the butcher, was brought to police headquarters to look at the suspect, Earl Ryan.
Take a good look at this man, Mr. Krause.
Yeah, Sergeant, I'm doing that. No. No, this is not the holdup man.
You say? I told you. I'm getting out of here.
Hold it, Ryan, hold it.
You're absolutely sure, Mr. Krause?
Oh, positively. Like I told you, the killer was just as tall as me, but this fella... Well, just look at him yourself. He's 2 inches shorter anyway.
Yeah, and I never had any trouble with cops. I'm an honest man. I'm no criminal. I haven't got a record. Look me up in your file.
I did, Ryan. You're right. No police record.
Okay, then. What are you holding me for?
We're not. Sorry we troubled you, Ryan. Sergeant Allen will see that you're driven back home.
Well, that's something.
Arrange for Mr. Krause to be driven home, too, Allen.
Okay.
Then meet me down to the file room. I want to dig out known stick-up men and see if any live in Krause's neighborhood.
Just a moment, please. I'm coming. Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. You're Sailor Smith, right?
Yes. Please come in.
Go ahead, Ellen.
Thanks. Now, what can I do for you?
We're police officers.
Yes, I knew you were.
How?
From long experience. When I was active in the safe-breaking business, I received many visits from the police.
You're not active in the safe-breaking business anymore?
No, sir, I'm afraid not. I have very serious eye trouble now. I've had to retire. You noticed I'm forced to wear these rather strong eyeglasses.
Yes. We're working on yesterday's killing at Krause's butcher shop.
I didn't think you came just for a social call. Well, I know exactly what happened. You looked into the files, found my long police record, and decided to pay me a call. Is that correct?
That's it, Smith.
And you said, ah, Sailor Smith. He lives in Krause's neighborhood, and he's a suspect. Let's go talk to him.
You've got it straight, Sailor, so let's talk. Now that you can't crack safes anymore, are you sticking up butcher shops?
No, sir. You flatter me very much.
In what way?
By suspecting me. Are you gentlemen going to accuse me of that shooting?
No, not yet.
Well, believe it or not, my friend, this is the sad part. The police haven't been attentive to me for quite a long time. It's good to know that I'm remembered.
Well, Sailor, now that we've made you so happy, perhaps you won't mind coming down to headquarters.
Oh, I'd be delighted. You want Mr. Krause to have a look at me, I suppose?
That's it. Want to get your hat and coat?
Yes, indeed.
They're right here on this chair.
Look what he's getting, Lieutenant. A pea jacket and a watch cap.
I see. All right, Sailor, let's get moving.
Oh, Lieutenant Britt and Sergeant Allen, while you men were out of the office, I've been reading the police magazine here on your desk. Very interesting. Have you brought back some news for me?
We sure have, Sailor.
I'll be most anxious to hear what it is. What's the verdict?
What do you mean?
Well, sir, unless things have changed a great deal here at police headquarters, you were observing me through that one-way glass.
You guessed it.
And was Mr. Krause observing me, too?
He was.
Well, what did he say?
He made positive identification. He says you're the man who held him up and shot his customer.
Oh, dear. Mr. Krause is so wrong.
There's no doubt in his mind, Sailor. Same height, same pea jacket and watch cap, same glasses. He says you're the guy.
Well, this is like old times. But I'm sure it will be all straightened out when you catch the actual culprit.
You still deny the crime?
Of course, Lieutenant. But naturally, you'll have to do your duty and hold me on suspicion.
That's right. Alan, take him downstairs and book him in.
Oh, dear.
Five p.m., Lieutenant. I think I'll go down and get some coffee. Can I bring some up to you?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Good and black.
Okay. Oh, has Sailor Smith cracked during the afternoon?
No, still denies everything. Hold it a second. Lieutenant Brett.
This is Otto Krause, the butcher.
Yeah?
Listen, why did you let that Sailor Smith out of jail?
I didn't. He's in a cell right now.
He can't be.
Well, he is. I just talked to him.
Look, he just left my shop here. He held me up again and cleaned out my cash register. Yanni, he put me in the icebox again.
How long ago did this happen, Krause?
5 minutes ago. This time I was lucky. I didn't have time to freeze. A customer came in and let me out. Excuse me, Lieutenant, but you were crazy to let out that Sailor Smith go.
I did not let him go. This must have been another man. How was he dressed?
Just like Smith in the sailor stuff, and he had on the same thick glasses.
How tall was he?
Well, oh my goodness. Wait a minute.
Well?
I must be crazy. He was 2 inches shorter than he was yesterday. Say, I guess maybe it wasn't Sailor Smith.
Well, it certainly wasn't. Thanks for calling. I'll send a man down to check for fingerprints. Goodbye. Alan.
I heard it on my phone. Something real screwy here.
Not so very. I think somebody's masquerading as Sailor Smith. Somebody who doesn't know the sailor's been arrested. Get Smith up here from the cell room. I want to ask him a few questions.
What are you doing in my room, Mrs. Foster?
Giving you some clean linen.
At 5 in the afternoon? How come?
Oh, the laundry came late this week.
I don't like you snooping around in my room.
Snooping? Mr. Ryan, I'm only giving you the service you pay for. And look at you. You've been out again without your hat and coat. You want to catch your death?
Look, Mrs. Foster.
You've been running again. A man of your age running like a boy. You'll kill yourself.
Look, get out of here and leave me alone, will you?
I will. Just let me straighten up a little. Socks on the floor, shoes on the chair.
Hey, put them shoes down.
Well, don't get excited. I'm just going to put them in the closet.
Put them down, I said.
Mr. Ryan.
Nobody touches those shoes but me, understand? If anybody puts them in the closet, it's me.
Well, they must be real special shoes you have made.
What do you mean, special?
Why, they're so heavy, and the soles and heels are so thick.
So they're thick. So forget about them shoes and beat it.
Mr. Ryan, I'm not used to having my tenants talk to me this way.
Ah, that's tough. Now, look, are you going to get out of here or not?
Please, my arm.
Go on. Blow you.
I'm going to ask you to vacate this room.
Get out of here.
This is fast work, Lieutenant. I guess you boys found the real killer, or else you wouldn't have brought me up for myself.
I want to talk to you, Sailor.
Always a pleasure, believe me, questioned by the police. It's really like old times.
Now, listen. Do you know a man named Earl Ryan?
Earl Ryan. Now, let me think. Oh, yes, sure. Where is that old son of a gun?
When did you see Ryan last?
Oh, not for 3 or 4 months, I guess. I know. Last time was Halloween.
How much do you know about him?
Not much. We just met in a bar last fall. We got real chummy over some beers, you know, a little stiff, too. I've only seen him a couple of times, don't even know where he lives.
What's this about seeing him on Halloween?
Oh, there was a little party some of the boys in the bar cooked up, and Ryan and I got a little high and decided to go in costume.
What kind of a costume?
Well, not exactly a costume, but we dressed like twins. See, I loaned him an extra pea jacket and a watch cap, like the ones I always wear. We fooled everybody at the party. They all thought sure Ryan and I were twin brothers.
Did you lend him an extra pair of your glasses?
No, sir, I don't have an extra pair, but Ryan got hold of a pair somewhere. Looked just like these I got on. I wish I did know where Ryan lives. A son of a gun never came back to the bar again to return my jacket and cap.
Alan, down Mrs. Foster at the rooming house.
Sure.
Now, Sailor, at this Halloween party, was Ryan the same height as you?
Yes, he was. Funny, too. Oh, always before that, he was a couple of inches shorter. He must have had a pair of those elevator shoes.
Okay, Sailor, you're sprung. Sorry we troubled you.
Oh, that's okay, Lieutenant. I rather enjoyed it.
Mrs. Foster... Well, hold on, please. Lieutenant Brett wants to talk to you. There you are.
Thanks. Miss Foster.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Are you talking on the phone in your apartment?
No, sir. The number I gave you was the phone in the hall.
I see. Well, can you tell me if Earl Ryan's in his room now?
He certainly is. And if you ask me, he's out of his mind.
What do you mean?
Well, I've got to talk low because this phone's right next to his door. Yes. A little while ago, he grabbed me by the arm, frightened me half to death.
Why did he do that?
Because I touched a pair of his shoes while I was fixing his room.
What kind of shoes?
A funny kind, Lieutenant. The soles and heels were over 2 inches thick. Oh, dear. Here comes Mr. Ryan.
That phone, lady.
Mrs. Foster.
Mr. Ryan, don't. Don't!
Mrs. Foster. Come on, Alan. Hurry. At the boarding house, we couldn't find Mrs. Foster, so we forced her O'Ryan's door. Ryan? Lieutenant.
Hey, look.
Good Lord.
Oh, help me, please.
Let's lift her up to the bed, Alan.
Sure.
Oh, dear. Oh.
We'll be careful. Easy, Alan.
You'll be okay now, Mrs. Foster. There.
Phone for an ambulance.
Right away.
Can you tell me what happened, Mrs. Foster?
It was Mr. Ryan. He heard what I said to you over the phone about his shoes.
What did he do to you?
Oh, he dragged me in here and beat me. Beat me and cursed me because I talked to the police.
Then what?
Then he packed a suitcase, cursing me the whole time. Then, just before he went out, he kicked me.
I remember that.
I told you he must be out of his mind.
You're lucky he didn't kill you. He's a murderer.
A murderer? Oh, dear.
Lie still. The doctor's coming. Have you any idea where Ryan might have gone?
No, but I saw him looking at something.
What was that?
Oh, that little folder there on the dresser.
This one?
Yes, that's it.
Uh-huh.
Evans will be here in a few minutes, Lieutenant. What have you got there?
It's a bus schedule for St. Louis. He's got a departure marked here, the 6:22.
Bus station's about 4 blocks away. We've just got time to make it.
Oh. I'll make it. Oh. You stay here and look after Mrs. Foster. Put your arms out.
Nah, I gotta make this bus.
You're not leaving.
Hey, what are you doing?
Stand still.
What are you searching me for?
This. Just the gun you used at Krause's?
Look, I never used a gun before. That guy rushed me. I was scared.
Yes, but he's dead.
I didn't mean to shoot him. All I wanted was the money.
You went back in disguise and got that this afternoon. What's his key?
Well, it's for that locker over there.
We'll see what's in it. Come on. And don't get any brave ideas. You got your built-up shoes in this suitcase?
Yeah.
Now stand still while I open this locker. Pea jacket, watch cap, spectacles. Sailor Smith's twin brother, huh?
What do you know about him?
Plenty. Your impersonation almost worked.
I thought sure I'd hang it on that guy.
You came close. How'd you get the idea in the first place?
One night, Sailor got crotch and said he was an old safecracker with a police record. After a Halloween party, I decided I'd dress like him again and pull a stick up.
And he had a record, so you knew he'd be suspected.
Yeah, but after I shot that guy, I was scared. I ran here to the bus station, hid this stuff in the locker, then I ran back to my room.
So Mrs. Foster told me.
Yeah, I ought to kill that old dame. I ought to let her lay in there stiff.
You'd better hope that lady doesn't die.
How could this happen to me? I never had a prison record.
You're going to get one now, Ryan. A real beauty. Come on, walk.
In our cast, Sergeant Allen was played by Lawson Zerbe, Ryan by Don Douglas, Kraus by Louis Nye, and Mrs. Leslie by Betty Kane. Official Detective is produced and directed by Wynn Wright, written by Albert G. Miller. All names of persons and places used in this program are fictitious. Any resemblance to names of actual persons living or dead is coincidental. Jack Irish speaking. This program came from New York.
Official Detective on Tuned 2 yesterday from February 23rd, 1956 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And with our cases closed, that wraps this hour of mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levillier. Thanks for tuning in.